It is Baba's knife, yes. And how can I be helpful?
Let me just make sure this is working. I hate to take notes when we're talking.
I can understand that.
Just say J Baba.
J Baba.
Okay. The book, of course, is Baba's whole life.
Whole life, yeah.
From beginning to end. And
magic.
I wanted to just collect a bit more background information on your story about how you met Baba and how you came to contact and when you first heard about Baba and how you first heard about Baba. Because, of course, you're mentioned in the book and you have three kids, maybe even your four kids. Was she there? Yeah,
no, Diane wasn't there.
She wasn't. That was in 58.
Yes.
Okay. So maybe we could just start with how did you hear about Baba? You don't.
Goodness gracious. I didn't.
When was it?
When our family first heard of Mabel. And of course, not a lot goes in the book. I mean, of course, I don't know quite how to go about it, you see.
You can
and
tell me in as much detail as you feel.
And it wouldn't.
You don't feel exhausted. I may not include everything.
No, you wouldn't put it all, would you?
No. I would like to add.
Yes. Because when one, you know, when I speak to you,
right.
One sort of speaks from the heart, and maybe not always suitable for a book. I never know how to quite put it, you know.
Okay. Just,
you'll know what to do with whatever I tell you.
Yeah.
I see.
Feel free to go into as much detail as you want. I'd love to hear it anymore.
My goodness gracious, I didn't expect. I thought, just ask me one or two little facts about, you know, Baba's visit in 58.
Yeah, I would like about that too, but let's start from the beginning there. Like, you know, in Kitty's book, so you mentioned there was in about 1947.
Yes.
Coming in as through Elizabeth.
Yeah.
You might have known Elizabeth before that.
Yes. Oh. Should I start?
Yeah.
Well, let me see.
Are you comfortable now?
Yes,
you want another pillow?
Well, just something behind me. I seem to be falling down. Yes,
I'm just. Shape.
Oh, I like the chair, but it's a wonderful chair. But I just have to get a little used to it. Well, let's see, David, Baba. The first time. Charles and Wendy used to tease me and say, Mommy, couldn't you have a condensed version?
No, because, I like the extended version.
Because it's your whole, as you know, because it's happened to you, it's your whole life. So how you sum that up. But certainly after all these years, I should be able to just think of the highlights, as it were. The first time I ever heard Mia Baba's name was from Miss Azu Pitts. And
how do you spell
it personally? Z-A-S-U. Zazu, some people called it. Some called it Zazu Pitts. And I thought of that yesterday. We were on the porch at Beloved Baba's home, and Mira passed around a lovely photograph of the Beloved with Virginia Bruce. And so then she went on to say that Mary Pickford and Douglas Fairbanks gave reception for Baba when he was there in the 30s. And so my mind and my heart sort of leapt up a little bit, because I always had a fond spot in my heart for Miss Pitts because of that. In short, she heard of Mia Baba from Mary Pickford. And she remembered it. She was a great film actress, a wonderful comedian, probably, without exaggeration, one of the greatest that ever lived. She really was. She made over 300 films, and her forte was comedy. And then after, hundreds of films with Thelma Todd, long before even my time, she then made a comeback, a strong comeback, in something that even you may remember, a television series with Gail Storm. and I can't even recall what the name was, Gale Storm Series. And she was on shipboard, and she was the manicurist and so on. But anyway, she had her trademarks of a big bow and a wonderful bag. And she was professional to her fingertips, real pro, and brilliant on screen and stage. In any event, that's another story. But it was very beautiful. It's lovely, though, Elizabeth, as you know, because we've been friends a long time, is our family's link to Baba, our spiritual link. And we all have our stepping stones and other links. And Zazu was that for me. I was producing. I founded three theaters, first in North Carolina and then in Pennsylvania. And but some years before, it's just so, you know, you just go in. I go into too much detail because it's such one of those long things that, since a child, I wanted to go to Myrtle Beach. We were in North Carolina, and I longed to go, and it was partially to the sea. Of course, now I know it was Barbara Joyne, but longed to go, and we went not far from there, Carolina Beach, but never to Myrtle Beach. Then
you were a native of North Carolina.
I was, exactly, because my father was a newspaper man, had the newspaper there for 50 years, and so I was born there, and there was just always that longing when I returned. As a young woman, lost my mother, returned and married there. The father of my children, who's still a very dear friend of mine, Sonny Haynes, I used to say, oh, it's only 4 or 5 hours, you see, to Myrtle Beach. I'd love to go to Myrtle Beach. It was sort of like Mecca. I didn't know why. And I just couldn't wait. I wanted to go. And Durham is a very dry country. The only thing nice you can say is that Barbara was there at Duke. But anyway, they love the mountains, the Haynes family, and say, no, we have a house in the mountains, we're going to the mountains. So finally, one summer, and I think I can make that brief, it was the year that you mentioned, and I did not meet Elizabeth that year, but it's interesting you said 47, because if there was, in this lifetime, a starting point, that's when it was. Because in 47, Sonny said one day, you want to go so much, why don't you just go on your own, Jane? I was carrying John Barry Haynes in my tummy. I was expecting him. I went down and stood in the sea. When I think how it's changed, David, since then, you could look to the right and left. There was no condominium, no hotel, no huge building, just the sea. And I just stood in that surf day after day, did some deep sea fishing. And John always teases me about that because it was just before he was born. But anyway, that was the start. And so I was there beginning in 47, and I didn't know why, and would long to go back each summer. So I think it was about 54. Some friends, they were actually were millionaires, which is neither here nor there, except it kind of fits into the story. What's your family to do with George Washington Duke and Duke University? So friends of mine decided to put a professional theater. They were going to Charlotte, and then they phoned and said, no, we've decided to do it in Myrtle Beach. It's very ripe for that. Now, meanwhile, I had, you know, been in the theaters early in New York as a very, very young girl, and was currently producing civic theater with young people, original dramas, and children's theater. So it was kind of natural that Watts here would say, we want you to go down and get it going for us, do the groundwork and the pre-work. They knew I loved the publicity and that kind of thing. And public relations, so I did and took the children, and that was where, to Myrtle Beach, that's where I met Miss Pitts, and I opened for her.
So she was?
She was there, the leading star, one of their leading stars, and they had some that even you, as young as you are, recognized, Charlie Ruggles, Edward Everett Horton, just all those names that you can think of, the old-timers, Sidney Blackmore, Shepherd Sedgwick, some from the Irish Abbey Theatre, and many, they had to have star name each week. So anyway, Pitts was there, and I opened the play with her, as well as being associate director, as doing some acting. And she said one day, it was at the Ocean Forest, I wish you'd seen it. Did you see it before they tore it down? Oh, I would have given, Elizabeth and I almost in tears, they dynamited it. It was one of the most fabulous places in America. It was the first one built, not long after her father went there, and it was, we caught the wedding cake. It was white, and it was huge, and it was on the sea, and there were great ballrooms and crystal chandeliers, And when you and Sheila, when you and Sheila come and take you out to dinner at the place, the man went and bought some of the beautiful things from our ballroom where we had the theater and put it in his restaurant. Anyway, the ocean forest was simply, simply beautiful. And that was where these people decided to found the theater. So there we were. And Pitt said it was in the round. And she knew I'd worked in the round in civic theater. And she said to me one day, someday you'll have this theater here. And I'll come and I'll open for you. And I laughed and laughed. I said, Pitt, you're crazy. I said, you know, that will never happen. I said, you know, these people have it and all that, and I'm just, but in fact, they really consider me, I think, a dilettante because, you know, we had some home there and all that, and said, well, she comes up and helps at the theater. Didn't take probably my work as seriously as I took it, but anyway, I got my union card from working for them that year. Then they brought the big New York people in, and I found a notice on my desk, you know, one of those things. So, but I stuck it out. Pitt said, you stick it out. She said, I think because the children love it. I'd taken a house for the summer by that time. So they love it. And she said, just, you know, don't let them edge you out. Just get your union card stay. But she said that, and I remembered it. Anyway, after that, I went on producing because I loved it. I love the theater, not acting. Most people think, people who like the theater, that they're extrovert and that they love to, you know, sort of show off and they're out in this. But of course, is the reverse is true. They're generally very insecure people, very sort of frightened inside and having to sort of act out things. And not, it's a mixed, it's a whole mixed thing. But from my own perspective, I don't know what the creative drive was. I only know that the associations with people, particularly with new plays, I love to direct. I never talked to anybody about it. First place, it's not too interesting. And they say, oh, we used to be on Broadway. And they didn't. I just let it go with that. But the more that I'm with the beloved, the more I realized how many valuable things he gives to us all through those years when we're struggling to go towards him. Because in there's one thing about so-called showbiz. You are accepted as you are. That way I was brought up in the South, it depends on what family you come from, perhaps how much money you have, what social background, rather than the person. And I think that's one reason that I gravitated towards that. They are people of every color, every predilection, every appetite, every this, and there's more openness, more honesty, and you kind of had to be yourself anyway. No need of going to all that. The facts are what the beloved did. I look at on this 20th anniversary of the East-West Gathering, and that's what I was just mentioning to Mani. I look at it, and I see the sweetness of his hand, and I cannot believe it, what he did, because I paint a rather rosy picture, beautiful children. Their father's a very fine man, and he, at that time in his life, was one of the biggest builders in the Southeast. Hospitals, schools, you know, the means was there, the social thing was there, all those things. And yet, there was an emptiness, a very deep emptiness inside that I couldn't explain. So that the facts again were that after Pitt said that, events happened. I thought, I've done enough here at this theater. Now they have only the big stars, and Grizz has all these big people moving. He said, no, no, we don't want you to leave. I said, sorry. You know, I've done it. I've opened it for you. Now you're on a good basis. I'm going to move on. And as much as I love Myrtle Beach, I could see the handwriting on the wall. I wasn't going to be allowed to direct. I was only going to take small parts. And what they call go for the coffee, you know, the socialite who comes in and does things. I wasn't interested in that. So I had an opportunity through a man that you may know, Mike Ellis, who produced with Billy Hammerstein, Come Blow Your Horn, all of Neil Simon's, most of Neil Simon's thing, marvelous men, Mike Abramson, but he's Mac Ellis. We were in the Managers Association together. And this is interesting. The head of it was Frieda Zitzander, who's Wendy's boss now at Arena State. And she was a legend to me. You know, she's someone like, you know, Frieda Zitzander. So we were in the manager, and Mike said, there's somebody in Pennsylvania who wants to open a theater. I'll put you together with them because you're just right for that. That'll be good for you. Star System stock, same thing. All three of my theaters were in the round. I didn't know anything about proscenium theater. They were all in the round. So I went up. We had took the kids. They always loved it, and they loved being a part of it. And I must say, with all the emptiness I talked about, they were great joy in my life, always. They were always beautiful and always kind and always loving. So up we went near Lancaster, where I believe now the society has a place near there, in the heart of the Amish country. We can sum that up very quickly, that it was a very brilliant season. It surprised even me. What's a wonderful woman George Scott married, Colleen Dewhurst, one of the best actresses in the business. She opened for me in Nina with Eddie Horton. From that moment, every week, another smash. We had the Gabors and all, you know, you have to have all those names. But we had good theater, standing room only, marvelous season. The children loved it. I loved it. Everything was just great. So we only went up in the summer, of course. We went back to our country home, and I was getting ready. Now comes up to the point where the beloved, as I wrote just this morning, this afternoon before coming to you, transformed our lives, was the phrase that I used. It was so incredible, so incredible. I went back and was getting ready to go up. The American Legion had given the beautiful grounds in the beautiful building. I loved them, and they loved me. And it was a ready-made thing. The restaurant was there. The whole thing was there. And the love was there. Everything like this in Pennsylvania. So I was ready to go back up to sign. Oh, Pat McVeigh, the head of the Legion, come on, do it again this year. All right. So I was ready to do it. And just before going, it was May. And it sounds so strange, as all the each lover's beautiful Barbara story does, except, I guess, to themselves. But what it was, very simply put, because, again, and maybe out of now, all that long thing, you can take three or four sentences that may be useful to bow of my so-called story. All I know is just to tell the truth that all the things seemed to come together at once. Without getting maudlin about it, let's say I was covered with the world. Covered with the world. There was no worldly experience that I hadn't had. And I'm really kind of grateful to Barbara for that, because when I see people come towards him at the center, and somebody will say to me, you know, I saw so-and-so down in the kitchen. But I have to tell you, Jane, I don't think they're quite ready for Baba. And I have to just smile to myself. I have to really smile inside. And I always thank Baba. I always say, thank you, Baba. Because I remember what that was like. Being in the world, covered with the world, covered with ignorance, groping, trying to get out of that, and being maybe condemned. Is that the word, or certainly a little criticized, if not condemned, by the rest of society. Enough said. That the reasoning, the motivation for that is unimportant, is just a fact, a fait accompli, that I cried out from the depths of my being, from my inside heart and soul, and it must have been God, it must have been Maya Baba that cried out in me, because I hardly have any consciousness of it. I only know that I did cry out almost from the floor. And I said, help me. Help me. Please help me. If there is a God, if there's a Christ, Jesus, I pray to every night. I only knew two prayers, Our Father, and Now I Lay Me Down to Sleep. And those things would come in the night, you know, things like my mother's tragic death, the loss of love, not having the love, all the things that everybody has in their life, those things would come. Then I would just say that, you know. And I had that, whatever that image was of Christ. It was poor and small and limited, but it was my own. And in any event, I cried out, help me. Quick, I can tell that part. How Baba did it, I don't know. The next day, I got on the plane, because they say you must book your stars early, so come up and we get the season going. I got on the plane, and just before boarding the plane, I picked up a New Yorker magazine, and it was Easter, and it was May, and I bought that magazine to read on the plane. And I had only just cried out to Baba, to God, the night before. It's a true story. And I opened the magazine, and there was a story, a short story, by a writer whom I didn't recognize. And it was called Franny and Zooey by J.D. Salinger. And I began to read it. And that is when Baba caught me up or lifted me up or took hold of me. He reached me where I was, as he does everybody. He reached me through the two things that I loved besides my children, writing, good writing, and theater. And he just stabbed me in the heart. I read it, and it was so great. It was so tremendous because of what I was doing that I couldn't finish. I put it down. It was too good. You know, I didn't want to finish it. Then I'd pick it up, and I'd put it down again. And it was so fantastically beautiful. Then it came to the part where it said, Zooey's sitting on the bathtub. He's in the theater, you know. And he's sitting on the bathtub. He's talking to his mother or Seymour. And he says to his brother, he says, don't you understand? He said, look out there. Look out in that matinee. He said, you see all those ladies in the hats? And, of course, that was an in thing because we always called the matinees the ladies in the hats day, right? So he said, you see all those ladies in the hats out there, see, Seymour? He said, they're all Jesus Christ, every one of them. They're all Jesus Christ. And just something split inside of me. I said, what is happening to me? So that would take another 3 hours. We all summed that experience up. It just continued. And when people would come to the center and speak about drugs, the experience they had, then I was glad for this because it wasn't drugs. I wasn't involved in that in this lifetime. I'm just about everything else, but not that. But I knew what they meant because from that second, I can tell you know what I'm going to say. There was absolutely no need to eat. Didn't need to take food, didn't need to sleep. I'd lie down 10 minutes, I'd get up like this, full of vitality. Everything I touched turned to gold. I couldn't do any wrong. I want this stop, that happened. I want this play, that happened. Just like this. I could tell many stories and I won't tell them. That time in New York, and I was at Sutton Place, and all this was happening, and they thought I'd gone off my rock. We say, oh, we always thought it would happen. My stage, my profession, Joanna Barry, always thought Joanna would, you know, flip out. Been, she's working too hard. Now she's really gone. Look at her. Because all I would say, don't you understand, is God's plan. It's all God's plan. Don't you know that? That's all I would answer. Whatever they asked me, say, how much money do I say? It's God's plan. So naturally, they thought I was crazy. Okay, so it's Wednesday, and I'm to sign with the Legion. A lot of money, big theater. I'm to sign on the Thursday. It was 4 a.m, and I was staying at Sutton Place. And there's a very handsome man, an old friend, no romance, just a friend. He's sitting across. He comes in and cuts the light. What is he doing? 4 a.m. I'm resting. I said, what are you doing, Stephen? Nope, never mind. Just go back to sleep. I have to make. I want to get this down while it's fresh. He just photographed Eisenhower that day. He's the best photographer in America. Eisenhower, President Eisenhower. Yeah. And
who is the photographer?
Stephen Calhoun, best in America. Lived on Sutton Place. I was staying with him.
In Philadelphia?
In New York. In New York, because I hadn't gone up to Lancaster. I was going up the next morning to advance booking the stars, getting the money, you have to put the bond down, then going up to sign on the dotted line to take the theater again. So he's there. I said, what are you doing? I want to get these impressions while they're fresh. All right. You see, so he went on doing what he was doing. But I remember the time, it's 4 a.m, and this experience, whatever it was that Baba was giving me from the time that I read the 2 days before, Zooey, began to be heightened. It was very, very strong. And I felt, I can only say, I don't know any other words, very blissful, no pain, just very blissful and very, very, very happy. And I watched Stephen for a little while, and then I kept hearing those words like this, it's God's plan. I thought, you know, maybe they're right. Maybe you are going crazy. And Stephen said today, you know, you look like... And I saw my friends in New York who used to have Madame Pandit at their home every time that she came. And I think of Janet's name, Yorenji, E-U-R-E-N-G-I-E, always had Madame Pandit. And then I would go there, and she said, I've never seen that look in anyone's eye, but But once she was from India and this and that. Are you sure that you're well? I said, yes, I'm all right, Janet. I said, but I can't explain. Something's happened to me. And we talked. So that is what's happening. So then he finishes what he's doing. I just kept saying something sad. It's God's plan. And don't worry. You're not going crazy. Everything's all right. You stand at the tomorrow. The maid or whatever they brought, the early coffee or tea, the phone rings. It's my children's father, my childhood friend, Sonny Haynes, whom I'm still very fond of. He said, Jane, he said, guess what? He's very funny. He said, what? Grizz and Watts are tired of playing with the toy. I said, oh, want you to come down and take Myrtle Beach? I said, you're crazy. You're out of your mind. No, he said, that's right. That's what they say. They're tired of playing with the toy. You're the only person who can do it. You come down, you'd have to know him to appreciate it. I said, I'm getting ready to sign my theater, my long thing, you know. I was doing fine, and they came and put Jimmy Winslow in there, and I said, now they can take it and shove it, son. But my heart was beating so fast, because all the time, I just would think, if I could ever go back there again, and if someday, Myrtle Beach, you know, it's like Mecca, and my heart was beating fast, but I thought, you know, they are putting him on, and I'm not going to fall for that. So I hung up the phone. And Stephen said, what is it, and so forth. And then a lot of people came in and stuff. So, and phone's back. And he said, this is in May, Easter, 57, my magic number. That's the year. So he called back, and he said, Jane, they're not kidding. I said, I don't have any money. I said, I never use yours, and mine's all tied up in Pennsylvania. I said, what do you say? He said, they say you don't need a cent, not a penny. What are you, crazy? No. They're not going to open. They give you the theater. As you get the lights, the equipment, too, everything, sound, the whole thing, if you'll come down and produce at Myrtle Beach. I said, Sonny, I said, you tell them I'll be there. So then I went up to Pat, dear old Legionnaires. And, of course, everybody's dying to get that theater because there was money in it and it was already built. I had built it. It was in good shape. No problem there. So they wished me well. But the experience took a different turn. I still didn't need the food or the sleep and still felt the bliss and like it's God's plan. But when I got back to Hope Valley, which is my country house, I tried to say it very quick. I used to tell my mother, I won't live past 33. She, Jane Dixon, don't speak such things. Don't say things like that, she said. No, I said, it's true. I know I won't, just a little child, you know, things like I would say that. When I got back, there was like the pain and the paralysis, and I couldn't move. And I couldn't move. I literally couldn't move. So they carried me from the master bedroom. I wanted to go into the study. They took me there, and then the minister came, and he's so beautiful, Dr. Regan, and my father's very well thought of. He was a brilliant journalist, newspaper man, and very social and all this, and so all the thing. They all came. And so I tried to tell him. And I said, but you see, Dr. Regan, this is what happened. And then I told him something. And he listened, and then he shook his head. I'll never forget it, David. He said, Jane, I'm sorry. I can't help you. I'm not an artist. I'm not a saint. I'm a workhorse in the house of the Lord. But I give you my blessing on my love. And he left. He's a very prominent Presbyterian minister. Our church was Presbyterian. Then the doctor, oh, no, it's not fever. And I said, you know. I said, you know, that I had very great fever. And they said, no, the doctor, no, I was on fire. I was burning. And he's saying, geez, I could hear him out in the hallway say to my father, Sonny, to all the people, no, she doesn't have a fever. I think it's overwork. And she's, you know, like this. There wasn't all that it was a breakdown or something. Okay, so just jump all over that. One person that I thought was spiritual that I used to know, and all the Duke people came, you know, Dr. Ryan and all those people from Duke to our church, and Dr. Waldo Beach, who, by the way, now there's a Baba lover called Sandy and Washburn, and he lives with Ronnie Lawn at there near the center, and that's a very sweet connection because his brother married this man, Dr. Beach, is in precious daughter, and they were my friends, and he's the only, quote, spiritual person that I knew, so I asked to see him, and he listened to all the strange harangue and this craziness, and then he just said, and I'll always remember it. He embraced me. I was lying down, and he said, "I just want to say thank you." And he kissed my forehead. He said, "Thank you for sharing this experience. It's brought me closer to God." And he left. So it went on and went on, and we just jumped all over that. Charles was the only one, and Wendy too, but she was a teen, honey. Charles would come and read me Bible stories, and he didn't call me crazy, and he knew somehow something was happening, and he would sit with me and all like that. It got worse and worse and worse. It reached a climax, and then I always would say to myself, I hope that won't go in any book, but I always said to myself, now I know what it's like. You see, you don't go up, you go down. At least that's where I, because I was going down, and I knew it, and I felt it. Just leaving body, go down, down, just like this. And I said, I called out. I said, "But I'm not ready." And everything stopped, just like that, just stopped. And the bliss remained, but the pain went. And I said, "But I to myself, I can walk. I can get up and go to the bathroom, but I feel very good. All the pain is gone." It was amazing, and I felt that. So I called Sonny, quick to come. I said, "I'm going to Myrtle Beach. I'm leaving tomorrow. Are you all right, sweetie?" I said, "Yes." I said, "I never felt better in my life. I feel great." And but it was still that it's God's plan. Went down, started getting things opening. Called Pittsburgh's long distance. I said, "You crazy girl." I said, "Crazy female." I said, "You were right." I said, "Guess what? Since you got Myrtle Beach." You see, I said, "How did you know all those years ago?" She said, "I could tell." I said, "You promised to open for me. I'll be there." "Okay," I said. "Whatever, 10:15. Sally, go Cadillac." "Great, I like the show. Who are you going to have? You're going to book." "All set." So I went down, and it was such a beautiful theater, and started getting things going in Pitts. The kids loved her, and she's funny. Sally, go Cadillac. The theater, Myrtle Beach Playhouse. Mm-hmm. And I changed it to Carousel. Star Theater. Carousel Star Theater, because I like the name better. And there we were. And the Ocean Forest, a beautiful ballroom that I told you about, we lost. And Milton Kaufman used to say, "Oh, God, that's the biggest mistake I ever made, was letting the theater out." Because it did a lot of business for it. But they needed it for convention. So Grizz and Watts, it's only interesting to you because of Baba, had put it in town. I didn't like it. I said, "I want all that noise and stuff." So I looked quick. "Where's the best place?" And they said, "Oh, it's this beautiful shrine thing, this huge brick thing on the highway." "I'll take it," I said. "How much? Can I lease it?" "Sure, you can lease it." They were all, you know, my friends. We used to see each other in the summer. By that time, we built a summer house there, and they were wonderful. I loved that community. I've always loved it. "So, Jane, whatever you want." They were so sweet. So I said, "Let's put it there. That's a good place for it." So that's where it was. And so then Pitts comes, and you know you work one show in the daytime, right? One show is being worked in the day. You play another one at night, and then you do the same thing. And it's very hard because you have to get volume. You've got to produce because you have lots of money to pay out. Big star money, big nut, we call it, to crack every week. So you have to get the volume. So working very hard, and Pitts came, and she was in Cadillac, and she was very sparkly, she was very funny, and everybody loved her. Second week. It's now June 19th. About 19th or 20th, right. She comes in the office, and she says, "I want to see some of these beautiful homes around here. You haven't taken me anywhere." I said, "I don't know any beautiful homes, Pitts." I said, "Look, you know, I'm here. I'm working 18-hour day." I said, "You know, go ask somebody else." We were good friends. By the way, I forgot to tell you, she took me as her advanced woman in the years in between, and I booked her on the road, and she helped her make a comeback. So that was exciting and wonderful because they said she was all washed up. So she said, no, I want you to take me." I thought, oh, Lord, you know, wait a minute, because I never went out anywhere. I remember Miss Universe pageant promotion. That woman had that beautiful house up there and had an aviary. So I said, "I know, Pitts. If I can find out where it is, you'd love the place." Okay. Residing Post's house. She sold it later. So her husband had built this aviary, this beautiful place on the lake and all that. And I remembered going to promote the show, and I didn't want to go and have to dress up and all that. But I remembered. So I took her. She was cross as a bear. How Baba works, and
Eileen or
Pitts. I took her in the sports car. She's cross. She wouldn't get it. I changed my mind. I said, I said, what are you talking about? I said, I don't even know this woman. And I thought, I said, you're going in there and you're going to be nice. Oh, right, but I'm not going to stay. So she gets in with her little bow and her bag was always on her own. So she sashays in, wouldn't look at the aviary, wouldn't look at the lake, wouldn't look at anything, just like, and I'd never seen pitch like this. Never. She was always gracious. So I looked at Eileen as if to say, I don't know what's the matter with her. So they talked to her. She wasn't really very rude, but she wasn't nice either. We're starting to go. I see it like it was this morning. She turns around. There was a huge dining and kitchen area, and Eileen was fed up. You know Eileen. She's a little tiny, so talks like this very suddenly. I don't know what's wrong with her. So she goes in and starts stirring the black-eyed peas. So she's stirring the peas like this, and Pitt says, by the way, she said, what about this master calls himself Mehababa? I'd like to see him. The moment she said those two words, and it's a true story, only Baba would believe it. The moment she said, two things came just like this into my consciousness. I saw in my father's newspaper a picture, and there was a hand curved over a sofa. Later, I knew it was Elizabeth's hand. Baba didn't even let me see his face, but I saw this hand over like a sofa or chair, and I saw the words spiritual, master under here, and Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. And, of course, it was 52, and it was on the AP in my father's newspaper, printed it. But I didn't know that. But I remember, and it flashed into my head. Mind you, that it's God's plan thing was still going on. I was still blissed out, right? And then the children's grandmother, who's funny as can be, she's now 86. She talks like this. Stonewall Jackson, believe it or not, General Jackson's great-granddaughter. Funny, would never drive, so she hired a chauffeur. We're going down, and Kath's driving, and we're going down the highway. That's who we built the house for. And she goes like this. You know, Jane, that's in this place. Over, it's right over here in this, I don't know, person from India comes. She was always interested in everything. Very lively, interesting. Yeah, I don't know, something comes up. And it went right through my head. She was gesturing towards the center. But that night I had a dream, and Barbara let me know later. It's a vision. And I saw, like, it looked like it was a fit. And it was rounded and beiges and browns with white sort of grays. And it was going like this, pointed. Like this, and it's rounded, and there were people inside, and they were singing, and I heard them, like celestial music. They were singing, so happy. I couldn't see them, but I could see them. I knew they were there. It was early morning, and I was conscious of being in my room, but I still was asleep. Like so, quick, those two things. As soon as she said, "I want to see my father's news," oh, I had that funny dream when Mama Haynes told me about that place up there. So I quick said, "I'd like to go too." I heard them make an arrangement. I'd like to go there, too. She didn't reply to me. She didn't even say, you can't go. She said nothing. She just ignored me.
Eileen.
And I was very hurt and angry. And I thought, what? That's a nerve, you know. Elizabeth used to say, if you think we're awful now, you should have known us then. We were really something. I was so mad with her. I thought, well, with you. So I went out to the car and sat and waited for Pitch and didn't even ask him when her date was. I said, okay. Because, of course, as you can tell, it was all an inner drawing. I didn't know up here what was happening. It was all Baba's grace. I deserved and earned none of it. None of it. But he heard that cry, that desperate cry, you see. So anyway, we would go back. You've guessed the rest of the story. On the appointed day, then the Penelope Koch, beautiful girl, and she's Cleveland Amory, whom you know. His right hand, and she practically owns New York, and she's the most beautiful, gifted woman in the whole world. She was my right hand. So she comes in, Penelope, and she says, Mother, I have to tell you something. So this is a lady making a scene out in the lobby. And I said, you know, what is it? I was so tired, and we're working well, and we're doing all the plays. I said, don't bother me. That's your job. Why isn't she back? She pisses me back. Well, she went to Baruch Institute. She's still down the plant. I said, then go and tell the lady, but don't give me your problems. I have all the time. She closed both the doors. She goes, and she comes back. Can't do anything with her. I'm telling you, Joanne, I can't do a thing with this woman. People can't even buy tickets. She's having hysterics with her. So I went out. And I hardly know that woman. And he made it. What are you going to do about it? So I was so mean and ugly and rude to her. I never forget it. I said, I asked to go. I said, and you didn't even answer me. So I said, as far as I'm concerned, it's your problem. I said, and you deal with it because I'm not getting out of it and I'm not helping in a lot of other unpleasant language and wouldn't slap the door. So finally, Peniel came back again and she said, you're really going to have to do something. She won't leave and she's screaming all over the place. So, of course, I wasn't 100% bad, just 98% mean. The other 2%, I said, all right. She said, you have to go and make expert. All right. She said, well, you can't go like that. I said, well, how am I going to go? This is what do you mean? This is my working. Well, I can't take you there. I don't even know that lady. You don't understand. People just can't go up there. You have to be invited. And they never go. So she took me by the house with the aviary and made me put on her niece's pants, which were too tight. In those days, I was very slim and young because, as I told my mother, you see, I was 32 then. Baba had me reborn before 33. So I was very young, and I couldn't hardly get in them. And the only thing I think I'm going to sit down, and they're going to split as soon as I sit down. It's all I could think. Anyway, went out, Elizabeth, little beige hat, the only thing personal to purse that I saved. I gave to her sister, to Eveline. I couldn't. It's very painful to see her thing. But I kept the little hat. I keep it up next to a hat of mine that the beloved wore and told me to keep always. And this little beige hat with the little veil and little seed pearls. And the porches, that last porch wasn't built yet. And she came out from the other porch with both hands like this outstretched. She said, welcome. She didn't say, who the hell are you? Where's the star? I said, welcome. Like this. And I don't know what I felt. Peace and joy. I felt the loveliness of the place. Didn't know Maya Baba's divinity, of course, but I thought, gee whiz, this is something, isn't it? And she walked me across the bridge, and I had seen shadows, a few shadows on that other little porch. And I said, Mrs. Patterson? No, call me Elizabeth. Elizabeth, who are those people? In those days, nobody came to the center, David. Oh, she said, Princess, a dear friend of ours, Princess Norina Machiavelli, has just passed away. And they've come for the service. I came into the center gates by Baba's grace. It was 44 hours, 48 hours after Norina went to him. And then she said to me, Elizabeth, as we got across the bridge, you know we've met. And I said, you're mistaken. We've not met. I wouldn't forget. Oh, yes, last night. She said, you see, Maya Baba says, you must be happy in death and not grieve. You must be happy. So Mr. Burroughs, the president of my company, my father's company, sent Miss Kitty Davy and me and our friend Margaret Krask 3 seats. He's one of your patrons, isn't he? I said, yes, he is. 3 seats to your theater, and we went. The lights had gone down. We went late so people wouldn't see us. And you at the front, which, of course, I never was. It was always in the back. You at the front, and you opened the door, and you said to me, come in. I've been waiting for you. And at that moment, she said to me, Maya Baba showed me something in your smile. Of course, as you can tell, it means the world to me now. It didn't then. I just said, oh, I don't remember that. But it's very nice that you do or something. So again, we can jump all over that year. I felt peace and beauty there. I received a cable from Maya Baba on August 15 of 57. It just said one word. Excuse me. If you count the people's names, 2 words. Love. Ellie Kit Jane, Maya Baba. And of course, I'm glad I saved it because then, as I've told you, I didn't know Maya Baba's divinity. But recently, Wendy brought back from Mani a copy of the letter I wrote when they said you could write if you wanted to come. You remember at that time we were to come instead of Baba coming here. And I was rather amazed at the letter, how much Baba did let me feel. It spoke of my heart's longing. It spoke of things like that. Because I had really felt that most of this was totally all Baba's grace and was an unconscious drawing. But in any event, no need to go into all that.
After that first meeting in Elizabeth, you must have seen her.
I began coming to the center, and she said, must come regularly, must come often, and unless you make a certain time, you won't. So at 5 each day, I would go to your pandoons, have a light meal with them. I could leave the theater for that period of time.
So they were living in that other house?
I were in New Pontoons.
Yeah.
Ah.
That's where
I met them.
On the veranda, she came out.
At the center.
At the center.
She came out from the kitchen. From the kitchen. Original kitchen. Before those porches were built, you see, and came out on the patio with her hands outstretched. Yes, Arlene took me right there to the center. But when this regular meeting would come to Upandoons, and then we would go to the center, and there were, of course, many...